This is the second part of the talk on what do I see. So we'll focus on practice. And the classic practice with all the aggregates and more or less with everything else, to make the seeing itself visible is to see the way something arises and disappears. And that's a classic practice that we all know about. It is to break the fixation, the clinging, the craving on things being, having their own automatic appearance, by breaking them down. Breaking down the seeing into, and seeing means all the senses, thinking, etc. And there is very much a classic formula in the suttas that describe this. And he says, so long as I didn't directly know, as they really are, the five aggregates subject to clinging, didn't know it in the four phases, which he'll continue and tell us what they are in a moment, then I didn't claim to have awakened to the perfect enlightenment in this world. But when I directly knew all this as it really is, then I claim to have awakened. So his awakening is dependent on knowing the five aggregates subject to clinging in their four phases. And what are the four phases? I knew the form, its origin, its ending, and the way leading to its ending. I knew feeling, perception, sankharas and so on, consciousness, origin, finishing, and the way to the finishing of it. So what he basically is saying, only when I knew each aggregate, how it appeared and disappeared, then I could say I was awakened. If I didn't, long as I didn't know it, I wasn't awakened. So it's important. Well, we can't really do it with seeing, with the eye. It's just too fast. There's too much going on. We can't just sort of see the way. I mean, you probably could if you could do it in pixels. Could I have a light? More light? I want to, however, pass around to you some pictures that were painted by an artist who wasn't. He was a very close friend of a friend of mine in England, a Welsh artist. And he painted ordinary objects which he saw pretty well, like as if they're made of pixels, they're made of pieces. They're not, that sight is not just one thing, because the brain is so rich, it's turning everything into a picture immediately. It's much easier to do it with thought, actually, because in some way or other a thought, it's easier to catch a thought, the beginning, the arriving, and the cessation, and the way to the cessation. Just like the Buddha said, the four phases, something arising, how it arises, it's there, and it goes the way it goes. A thought is more easy, you know, you say gaps between thinking, whatever, you can somehow feel it more easily. Hearing, you can do it more easily because there's less brain cells involved, but seeing is much more difficult to break it up into these pieces of arriving and passing. But here's some pictures of someone that sees, that's how he sees the world. And he talked a lot to a friend of mine, Robert, who's also an artist. This blue one is a picture of the high street of Totnes, where Christopher lives. This is a chair, and this is a woman. And I'll just pass them around. And you can have a look at them. Uh, And the interesting thing, if we watch carefully, if we watch carefully, and this is an important point, and it's a subtle point, when a thought arises and goes, if we watch it really carefully, it takes a bit of us away with it. It's an amazing thing, but that's what happens. That it's happening by itself. If we see, because we're so identified with thought, is the hood, we're identified with thought, for example, and we think thought is us, the minute we see that thought is just arriving and going, we are more ourselves arriving and going. We are more disappearing in some ways. We go with the thought. The thought arises and disappears, and we arise and disappear with it. So it's just worth remembering, we may not, this language is not used usually in retreats, okay? It's not, but it is what's happening. When a thought goes, which we identify like, thought like, oh, what am I going to do with my job tomorrow? Okay? That thought comes, we see it as thought, and it's gone completely, and there's a gap in, you know, there's nothing. That what was there was not, is not there. At that moment, we ourselves, a tiny bit of me, has gone with it. Okay? And so that's the way clinging is disintegrated, is slowly we move out of identification. We reduce identification through seeing the way things arriving and disappearing. But more than that, we can also do other things with perception, and one of them is reduce the papancha. And here's a story that reduce the papancha, the chains of processing, to stop the chains of processing. And that's another way in which we can break the construction, the dream of me separate from the world out there. And I have to tell you the story, personal story, which I'm sure I've told it before. Maybe you've all heard it before, because I've told it before in retreats. But it's just such a very good example of this. And I was walking in Switzerland, and I have a fear of heights. And from childhood, and I thought that I dealt with it because I practiced with it, and I haven't really had it for years and years and years and years, so I thought it was gone. And then I was in Switzerland, and I was walking in the Alps, and it was afternoon on my way down, and I didn't read the map properly, and I was on my own, and I was walking a sort of quite a wide space. And all of a sudden, one side sort of went like that. At least 2 kilometers down, there were tiny little buildings and the tiny little trees like that, way, 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 way down, and it was like... So I walked like this. I moved away from the edge and sort of walked there. Couldn't go back or anything, so I had to carry on. After another half a kilometer or whatever, this side also went down, just was sheer drop. And I found myself on a path like this, where both, it was like the ridge. You know what the ridge? Mm-hmm. A ridge on a, it was a ridge like that, sheer like that. And the map showed it, but I just didn't bother to read the map and properly. And I couldn't go back. When this fell down like that, I collapsed. I was nauseous, I wanted to vomit, I was dizzy, I just collapsed on the ground, I couldn't move, my face was on the earth, it hit me so strong.
You were on your own?
Yeah, it hit me really strong. And I stayed on my face on the ground for a few minutes, and then I thought, wait a minute, where's Dharma? And so I started to breathe, and I paid attention to my breath. Mindfulness of breathing helped me calm me down, and so I sat up, and I sat there on the for another few minutes, calming down, body, mind, calming down. And then I began to think, well, if I don't allow the processing to happen, then the fear won't happen. So I started to walk slowly and saw down there, well, those houses way down, there's little red marks without any meaning, just red mark, and the little trees, little green down there, and the little red mark down there and green down there, no meaning, as if it was just a picture, I was walking through a picture, had no relevance, had no implication, there was no height, there was no danger, there was no nothing. If I can keep that concentration, so I could keep it for 10 minutes and without any processing whatsoever of the information coming through the eyes, and I could hold that so I could walk. The minute I lost concentration, whoosh, the whole thing came and I collapsed. It was so strong, that experience of holding that vision of no meaning or no processing whatsoever. It was a very strong experience for me to see how it works. And then as soon as I let go and I couldn't concentrate, the whole thing came with fear, with everything, you know, the history, the past, that it just came all flooding back in one enormous wave. And then, so I had to stop, breathe, and then I could do it again, and I got down that way. But it's just an interesting story because it's very clear example in my own life how it works, this just direct seeing. And there is a sutta that I want to send to you, and it was sent to you already, the Bahia Sutta, but I think it was sent to you in English, and I have it in Hebrew, right? So I will send it to you in Hebrew, and you should read it. It's a very very nice sutta, and it very much is about using perception as a way, and senses as a way of awakening. And the story in brief, you'll read it when you get it, is that Bahia was a kind of sadhu sitting by the beach, and he suddenly had an intuition that maybe he wasn't as awakened as he thought he was. And he asked the gods, and the gods said, no, you're actually not awake at all. And he said, so he said, well, how can I get awake? And he said, go to the Buddha. And he rushed to the north of India, three thousands of kilometers. He just ran there. And he came to the Buddha, and the Buddha was in the middle of the arms round food collection. So the Buddha said to him, it's not the right time. Sorry, I can't give you Dharma now. But he said, please, I'm desperate, and just give it to me now. You know, I need it now. So he said, no. And the third time, Bahia begged him. So he said, okay, because you asked three times, I have to tell you. And I don't know if the Buddha said he might die.
No.
He said.
We don't know when we're going to die.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That time is now.
Yeah. Yeah, and he did die. straight afterwards.
Yeah, that's the whole.
Yeah, that's right.
He said silent.
And it. So the Buddha said to him, okay, I'll tell you brief. You should practice like this. In relation to the seen, there will only be the seen. In relation to the heard, only the heard. In relation to the sensed, only the sensed. In reference to the cognized, what you know, only the known. That is how you should train yourself. And when for you there will be only the seen, in reference to the seen, and the heard in reference to the heard and sensed, there is no you in that, in terms of that. It's just seen. It's like there were the houses down there. There was no me there. It was just a red mark. And when there is no you in terms of what you see, you are not there in what you see. Then there's no you there. And when there's no you there, you are neither there nor here nor between the two, and that's the end of suffering. So you're not in the seer and you're not in the seen, so you're neither there nor in between, so you're nowhere. So that's the end of suffering, namely the separation of subject and object. So in this case, he said, just be with the scene. In a sense, be with the object. And just a second. And I want to quote to you a quote at the end of the previous chapter of The Island, where it's a very interesting quote, which is relevant to what we said last Friday about you can either get there through the self or through the world. It doesn't matter which direction you go. You go to the world or you go to the self. You question either, you can get there from one or the other. And here, Bahia was just saying no self in the moment of seeing, in the scene. The quote is, using your wisdom, observe inwardly the mind and body, and outwardly the world. Completely understand both, as you would look through a pane of glass. From the outside, seeing in, and from the inside, seeing out. Inwardly, there is no body and mind. Outwardly, there is no world. Although there is no body, nor mind, nor world, the body and mind and the world function together, in accordance with one another. Although they function together, then they're not attached to one another. And this is called recognizing your own original mind, the original self nature. The true mind penetrates inside and outside. And the recognition of your original mind is liberation. No. It's a Chinese. And here again, the Buddha says, the Buddha, the Tathagata, fully enlightened, directly knows earth as earth. Having directly known earth as earth, he doesn't think of himself as earth. He doesn't think of himself, he's in the earth or belongs to the earth. He doesn't think of himself apart from the earth. He doesn't think of the earth as mine. He doesn't say, I want earth. Because he understands that this is the root of suffering and birth and aging and death. And the same way with water, the same way with nirvana. He doesn't think of himself as nirvana. He doesn't conceive himself as nirvana. He doesn't conceive himself coming from nirvana or apart from nirvana, or nirvana is mine, or and so on and so on and so on. So it's just seeing earth as earth, see the elements. Earth as earth, form as form. No self in there. This is not deadness. This is not a sense of, I think it's important, this is not being a kind of computer where you just see colours or sensory moments of senses, and otherwise you're a kind of zombie. I mean, sometimes people would think the meditation is a bit like that, sort of becoming a zombie. Someone said in the scientist retreat, someone said, oh, we are walking like zombies. It could happen for a while. But just, you know, just think now what happens when you don't get locked into me in the world, but just have open and direct contact beyond the self, then everything becomes very, very alive. Like the sun goes down. And the scientists will tell you, no, it's not the sun going down, it's the earth going round. But if you experience the sun going down, you feel the sun is under the sea, you have sunsets, the whole thing comes alive, you become alive with this image of the sun going down into the earth, you feel the sun in the earth and the darkness coming. In other words, the whole thing opens up if you're not full of yourself and the world. Or think of anything, think of a leaf, think of a flower, think of a moment, think of the senses, think of your breath, that you're touching the breath through, not through processing the breath, thinking about the breath, but really, really experiencing the breath in a non-self way. It actually opens up. So it's not that you would close things down by seeing the act of seeing. It opens it up, because it's just that much more coming in. You allow much more to come in because you're there with the seeing, rather than with the processing of the seeing. Because usually we shut down everything. The usual mind is shutting down. What's meaningful for me is what I have to do now. What's meaningful to in? I go into a shop, I need the milk. I don't think of anything else. I go into the shop, I don't notice the shopkeeper, I don't notice anything. I think of my milk, I want to buy, take out the money, buy the milk, go home. And the amount of meaning in that act is minimal. But when you allow the process of seeing to be rich and full, and not just me and mine in there, then you might go into the shop and you see all the colours and the whiskies and I don't know what the person there and his story and your story and I don't know a million things. And there was a story by one of the Dharma teachers in it that I heard, and I really don't know whether this is a true story. They say it's a true story, but it may be not. They said he was on a trip to Tibet, and they found a kind of a hermit and his wife living in a cave many, many years practicing. And this Dharma teacher came to him and to the hermit, and through a translator said, what's your practice? And the old man there said, I don't understand your question. So he said, what do you practice? Do you practice mindfulness of breathing? And the hermit said, what do you mean by that, actually? Do you watch your breath? So the old man said, sure, I watch breath. The whole universe is breathing with me. So, you know, that's like watching breath. The whole universe is breathing. So if you don't close things down into processing and into me and mine and me and the world, then everything opens up. Like talking about perception, like William Blake's famous poem about perception. If you clean the doors of perception, those six senses, clean them of processing, of assumptions, of conditioning. So clean the doors of perception, everything is seen as it is, namely infinite. It's only the processing of things that stops the infinity, Ein Sofi. Things in their nature are Ein Sofi. It's just the duality of me and the world, which needs processing So I'll finish with a quote of Krishnamurti about perception, which is because I like Krishnamurti because he's just so beautiful. His language is so beautiful and clear. So I keep quoting him, and I'm delighted. And it's been years and years, and I've been watching his videos, and I went to Krishnamurti Center for a year in India, and I taught in a school, Krishnamurti School, for 1 year. And I just love Krishnamurti for his clarity and the language and and his uncompromising, totally uncompromising. He didn't offer any you know, hanachot at all. Nothing, no comforts, no ladder, no nothing. He says, perception without the word and it, without thought, is one of the strangest phenomena. It's much more acute, not only with the brain, but also with all the senses. Such perception is not a fragmentary perception, means fragmentary, just the pieces, perception of the intellect, nor of the emotions. It can be called a total perception, and it is part of meditation. Perception without the perceiver in meditation is to commune, is like, it's more than to commune, it's not communicate. Commune is to join. It's marry with the height and the depth of the immense world. This perception is different from seeing an object, because in the perception of meditation there is no object and therefore no experience. It can take place when the eyes are open and one is surrounded by objects of every kind. But these objects then have no importance. One sees them, but there is no recognition and there's no experience. What meaning has such meditation? There is no meaning. It doesn't have any use. But in that meditation there is a movement of great ecstasy, which is not mixed, it is not to be confused with pleasure. It is the ecstasy which gives to the eye, to the brain, to the heart, the quality of innocence. Without seeing life as something totally new, it is just routine, a boredom, and meaningless. So meditation is of the greatest importance. It opens the door to the measureless, what cannot be measured. So we'll take a couple of moments to just reflect on that, then we'll have a couple of questions, and then we'll do one or two exercises if we want to. We can have time there for that.